Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, October 21st, 2015. I'm Myrot. Here's Rolo T. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Nick. I've come to realize something about myself.
What is that?
I'm a bit of a hipster, Nick. I've got an iPhone now. I transferred from Android to iPhone.
Okay.
And the first day I had my iPhone, I was on the bus. I was checking all the things out. Unintentionally, I realized, though, I was wearing a red plaid patterned shirt, like kind of like the quintessential like flannel patterned shirt, just not made of flannel.
Then you reached up to your head and you were wearing a beret. Around your face and you had a full beard.
I had the beard. I had like a curly mustache.
You checked your eyes and you were wearing horn rimmed glasses.
Yeah, I was wearing the big black sunglasses, but with no lenses in it. And in my other hand, I was like a Starbucks drink. Where did this come from?
I don't go to Starbucks. What the hell?
And at first, I was really, really like I was ashamed of myself. I was like, what a douchey. Like I couldn't feel more douchey. I think now it's time for me to really embrace it. I feel like hipster Rolo T is the next step of my life, the next phase. I've been nerdy Rolo T for so long. I was fat Rolo T, then I was just lame Rolo T. Now I think it's time for hipster Rolo T. Like I'm gonna like get a mohawk and yeah, I'm gonna redefine myself completely. I'm gonna wear those open-toed tweed sandals into work. Or not tweed. What are they, like hemp sandals?
I don't fucking know. I wear sneakers.
I feel like I already wear MeUndies. All Modell. So, you know, that's hipster in its own. I'm like, cotton. Please. Modell was twice as soft as cotton. For only three times the price. I'm embracing.
Why do you have a sudden lisp?
No, that's my derogatory, like, pushing up my glasses, looking down on you, like, do you still use Android? Oh, my, what plebeians you are. That's also part of my hipster transformation. I do change into that voice just because of my new thing. I'll still do a weekly manga recap, Nick. It's just going to be a lot more arrogant and douchey. I'm just like, Black Clover, why don't we just read garbage at this point?
Well, I guess you could read garbage. I mean, assuming you had thrown out something that was readable, you know, like a book or something.
I don't. All my food is organically grown in my compost heap.
So I need to keep the trash around. It serves a purpose.
Yeah, stupids. Recycling's for idiots. They don't truly understand how to save the environment. You do it by growing rotten peppers in your compost pile garden.
Do you just grow them rotten?
Well, if it's rotten. A compost heap pile, I feel like nothing good's going to grow from that.
Yeah, who the fuck uses manure as fucking fertilizer?
I'll take a quick trip to San Francisco. I'll get a lay of the land, be amongst my people for a little bit. Then I'll take those traits, bring them back with me to the East Coast.
My girlfriend's from San Francisco. What are you saying about people from San Francisco?
I'm not saying all of them are hipster douches. I'm sure she's fine. I've met Nicole. She's great. Everyone else, though, probably hipster douches.
I just said my girlfriend's name on the podcast.
is that a danger?
No, we've never done that before.
It's like that great Simpsons episode. It's like there was a complaint to the school from L. Simpson. No, that's too obvious. Lisa S.
Changing subjects very suddenly. I know you're gonna hate me for bringing this up, but people have been talking about it all day about it being Back to the Future Day and stuff. I'm not gonna harp on you for it or anything, though. I instead want to kind of share a little bonding moment with you because, you know, you've noted that Back to the Future is among the various films that people go, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen that because you haven't seen it.
Yes.
So, in order to throw in with you, I'll name some of at least one film that I have seen that people will probably harp on me for. I have never seen any of the Rambo films.
I haven't either.
But any of the Rambo films. Well, yeah, so there you go. We got something in common. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think that 2001 A Space Odyssey is a horrendously boring film and tremendously overrated.
But can you still appreciate it for what it does, like in terms of cinematography?
Oh, because I fell asleep during it. No. I never got to any of the good cinematography. I was like, has something happened yet? No, they're flying through space. Okay, cool.
Oh, no, I've not...
RoboCop, another one I haven't seen.
I saw the reboot, which I enjoyed, and everyone's very angry that I enjoyed that one.
Well, some people did enjoy it. I have seen the reboot of Total Recall, but not the original. The remake was terrible, by the way.
Okay.
Just tremendously stupid movie, and not like fun stupid like an 80s film like it would have been.
Did they still have the three-titted woman in it?
No, because they couldn't. I think they were just shooting for PG-13, so they couldn't do that.
Oh, that's ridiculous! Come on.
You make the movie where you know there's a three-titted woman, and then there's Arnold Schwarzenegger getting his face depressurized and stuff on Mars, and no, PG-13. I'm pretty sure it was. Let me look it up really quickly. Also, a lot of the scenes that people remember the old movie for, they did their own versions of them, which were stupid.
I will just be happy when today's over and I don't have to hear about fucking Back to the Future again in this context. Every 10 seconds I'm reminded, like, yeah, I guess Back to the Future said they'd happen today. And I feel like what's annoying me, Nick, is we get those images that pop up on fucking social media all the time where it's like, Terminator is 20 years old today. And like just this fucking like black bar with like a picture of a Terminator and like the text beneath it, like, you know, 20 years old today. Just to make you feel old. I think we're going to reach a point where like what you're just going to get is like 10 years ago, the 20 years ago Terminator happened photo came out. How old do you feel like you are? I'm just like, I can't deal with this anymore.
Oh yeah, there's never going to be a shortage of those things. Like in this day in history and stuff, there are entire Twitter accounts that are built around, you know, this day in X history or whatever. Like there's one that I see get retweeted fairly often, which is like this day in video game history and stuff. Which is just like, you know, 7 years ago today, Paper Mario 6 was released or some shit like that.
I'm like, today?
And it's like, you know, some days in video gaming history are less important than others, basically.
I'm like, Nick, did you realize that Silver Bullet is 30 years old today? And you're like, it's some god-awful werewolf movie from Stephen King, like the book, like the movie adaptation of his book, that is apparently god-awful, because I typed in awful 1985 movies and it was the first one to come up.
Okay, then.
It stars Gary Busey and Corey Haim, so I feel like it was a pretty well-deserved immediate rating.
Well, I'm not too surprised that a Stephen King movie was considered bad.
Yeah.
I think it's like The Shining.
Oh, but Terry O'Quinn was in it! I turned my entire opinion on this movie around! I can't hate it if Locke was in it.
Anyway. Let's move on.
I need to preface this episode by saying, God damn it, Hearthstone just tweeted some stupid bullshit about Back to the Future. I need to close Twitter. I can't deal with this anymore. I'm so tired of this. Fair warning to everybody. The Mets are one game away from going to the World Series. I'm not a crazy huge Mets fan, but I am a Mets fan. So if you quietly hear me in the background go like, hoorah, it's because the Mets just did very well. I actually should make a manlier. It's going to be like, oh, yeah. There we go. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, Mets going to the World Series. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go, Mets. Oh, yeah. Oh, rest in peace, me.
Tower of power, too sweet to be sour. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm too proud of my Macho Man.
We need to find that could be Hideo from fucking that One Piece chapter. He doesn't have too many lines.
Yeah, I'll bring it to mind. That's something I should do. Macho Man impression for somebody in manga. There anyhow, you go. Let's talk about manga now. Okay. By the way, we don't have a tremendous amount to go through this week because we got no recommendation. We're still working through Parasite. Going to have it next week. Presumably, I'm going to, like, flip through each chapter in 10 seconds, because I can still remember it pretty well. So we'll do that next week. Meanwhile, this week, we don't have One Piece to talk about, and that usually takes up a good chunk of time. So we might get this out in under 2 hours for once? I don't know. Now that I've said that, we're probably going to take about a billion years on how stupid Fairy Tail was or something. I don't know. But yeah, let's get into it.
How much of a lie Fairy Tail's title was.
Recap portion of weekly manga recap. Starting off with Black Clover, page 34, Wounded Beasts. So the little bird thing, Kuro?
Nero,
that's it. He's perched on the little girl's head.
I didn't quite understand why the chapter opened with him.
Me either, but the little girl is like, oh, what's going on with the Magic Knights? Is Asta's trying to fight. Yeah, those panels were necessary. The little girl is still watching the guy who saved her.
Tabata was like, shit, I forgot to draw a panel at the start. Fucking bird.
So yeah, Asta's been surrounded by reinforcements who try to blast him with magic, and Asta does a Tasmanian devil impression to block their attacks. Just literally turned into this little tornado in order to deflect everything. He's weird.
Didn't like Fuego Leon be like, you're too tired to keep doing
it. Yeah, he's just like,
you're not too tired to do that, duh. Everyone has the energy to do that once.
So they're like, your struggles are pointless. Oh wait, that's the anti-magic hit the master was talking about. So presumably, of course, these guys are connected with that group they met before. They know about him. Yeah, because they've heard about him.
Something I find very interesting, though, is, I guess this title spoils something that comes right up, but these guys aren't using a book right now. Like, the magic they're casting, the fireballs, that appears to be something they could just naturally do.
They aren't holding their books out while they do it.
Yeah, because the one guy makes a note later on when he actually does take his grimoire out to do, like, real magic. So I guess there's, I don't know if it's something maybe I just didn't realize has been, like, a staple in a series, or if this was a revelation of any kind, but I guess there's just a standard, like, magic that can be used, or maybe these guys discovered. No one reacts to it in a crazy way, so I don't know, but it seems interesting to me that these guys have, like, fireballs they can just shoot out and not need to have a grimoire for it.
Deadly fireballs. Didn't have their sleeves.
Yeah. So, yeah, just my observation. I don't know if that's something that's been revealed before or not.
So Asta remembers the bit of advice that Fuego Leon gave to the other knights, which is, you have to keep a cool head. And so Asta's like, right, I should stay calm. I'm going to calmly kick their butts. You're just like, you're so lame, Asta. God. Stupid one-liners.
He's like, but I wrote that one for you, Nick.
I don't care. So Lion helps out Asta. He just kind of appears in the middle of them and starts shooting fireballs out. And he's like, I'm not going to just stand by after what you guys did to my brother. And so they start to work together. And they, have this big, back-to-back, standoff against everyone while they're going, rawr! Just rawr!
Do they actually both go rawr?
Yeah, there's a giant
behind
that goes rawr!
They did that for a while, yeah.
So, but they're like, oh, whatever, and they start to shoot more fireballs at them. But Noelle also kicks into action, and she summons her Sea Dragon's Lair shield around them to deflect it. And she's like, oh, don't think you can kill my friend so easily. And she's got a magic wand, which, it's got that whole thing with, like, the books and stuff. And I don't know. Is this a thing? I don't know.
Well, the magic wand was what she uses to gain better control of her magic. Like, that was a magic item she bought with, whatever her name is. The girl is like Kana, basically, in this.
Right,
this
you're right, the drunkard girl.
Yeah.
Yes.
She bought her, or helped her buy that, so it's supposedly supposed to help her kind of control her magic better.
But then, one of the cloaked figures pulls out his grimoire, and he's like, alright, I'll use grimoire magic as well. And so he summons magic draining roots, to immediately bring down Noelle's shield. So Asta and Lion are like, rah! And dive towards the guy with the book. Very amazing dialogue in this chapter. But then he summons these tornado needles, which basically kill them. Skewer them in like five places each. It looks very awful and bad. They aren't looking so good. He tries to summon another barrage with the tornado needles to finish them off, but then more reinforcements arrive, another shield pops up, and all the remaining Magic Knights were teleported away by the spatial magic user. They arrive in this big two-page spread, and One of them's like, how dare you send us all the way out there? We had to walk a long ways. I'm very tired right now.
Yeah, I'm... Do you see my hair? Do you think it does well in humidity? No. I'm like, which one of you is talking? Doesn't matter. All of us have very, very fancy hair.
Yes. The Spatial Magic user is like, how'd you get back here so quickly? And they're like, well, we really didn't want to, but we all worked together to get back. I suppose I should call it Super Compound Magic. And it shows that they, like, it looks like they formed basically a glider thing, and then one of them threw it like Colossus throws Wolverine or something.
How'd that dude get back, or is he just still out there?
I don't know. Maybe he attached a rope to himself or something.
He's like, this is going to really suck when it happens, but it's going to be pretty cool afterwards.
So
I feel like I feel like we missed a moment here to have the ship be shaped like a giant robot or something wacky, like some, like whoever created the ice magic or whatever that constructs it, or the wood magic. This would be the moment to reveal, like, oh, and they're a big, like, robot fan or something like that, and just shaped like a big goofy robot.
One of them was like, I know what we can do. We can just, like, stand on each other's shoulders so that we form a super robot.
And Robin still shows up and refuses to be the other arm.
You're not even in this series.
She's like, I still won't do it.
The knights say their things. The all-girls guild is still like, men, man. Where one of them is like, I guess men are totally useless. It's like, do you ever say anything else? Also, one of the other Magic Knights was a woman. Come on.
Maybe they just hate everyone outside of their guild, but since most of them are men, they just all just lump them all together.
They both suck anyway. Noelle's brother, oldest brother. I forget what his name is, but he's the guy with the weird cross in his front braid, which looks stupid. He's like, oh, yes, and we don't cooperate well with each other, but our squads exist to protect the peace of the Clover Kingdom and so on and so forth. So Spatial Magic Guy is like, let's go. And older brother is like, I will use my Reign of Silver to stop you. But one of the other cloaked figures summons a giant sticky salamander using gel magic, I guess. Uh-oh.
Gel magic.
And then...
obviously, the important element of gel. Nick, don't you remember your Pokemon? Fire type, water type, gel type. It's good against dark type, bug, steel. All the shit that nobody understands just gives an advantage over them.
And then one of them pulls out this giant syringe and jabs it into the sticky salamander. And this is the dark magic item, special properties plus alpha. So he like injects the spell with magic steroids, basically. So it turns out the gel turns into dark gel. And then the silver rain that got summoned falls into it and just kind of gets suspended there. And they're like, oh, how'd that happen? And then on top of that, the salamander stomps on top of Asta. He gets sucked into the gel salamander thing, and one of the other cloaked figures literally goes, mine, as Asta drops into him.
What's interesting is that we've clearly seen, like, at least three different members of this group reveal their powers, but they didn't show any faces to it. So it's somewhat interesting, I guess, maybe once we find out who they are, to go back to this chapter and see if they actually... you can see a bit of their personality in this. Like, clearly that dude seems to have some kind of personality to him.
Yeah, he's going like, hey, hey, hey. And he's like, what are you gonna do with him? He's like, that's a secret! So this is the Mayuri of the group, presumably. I don't know.
Yeah, stop laughing, it's weird. We're not the Vandenreich.
Yeah. Hans and Mimosa are like, oh no, Asta! And one of the cloaked figures says, remember this, Magic Knights. We are the Eye of the Midnight Sun, the ones who will destroy the Clover Kingdom. And they use the space magic to teleport away, and they take Asta with them. And that's the chapter. So that's a pretty big development there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like
it. Got kidnapped. I didn't see that coming.
I was worried at the start because it seemed like he and his friends were just going to clown these four, like the five dudes who showed up. But I was like, oh, this seems kind of defeating. Like, why did you even bother having them show up? But no, they actually beat them and then seemingly take him as well, which is an interesting development. Rades leaves with them too, so does the teleport guy. I guess the only person they left behind was the witch lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that'll be like their end to try to find out where these guys are. I can't imagine, though, that Asta stays a captive or something like that, because...
He am main character.
Yeah, and it's not to the point where the side cast is built up enough to be like, it's a rescue him kind of arc. So I feel like, I don't know, they'll stupidly put him in a jail cell made out of magic bars, and he'll just slash his way out of that and go home. But it is still an interesting development, like, oh, these guys are threatened. Clearly they have some pretty strong magic and skills on their side.
Maybe they're just going to try and see if they can find a way to, like, copy his magic, and then they're like, well, we're done with him.
Oh, that would be sweet if they actually just developed, like, an evil Asta. I think this would be the only manga I'd be happy if they put, like, the evil twin slash alternate version of the main character. If there was just a villain who had the power to negate all magic, I'm like, oh, sweet, this dude's gonna really jack some shit up.
That is much more of a villainous kind of power, isn't it? You know, being able to negate other people's abilities and take them away and stuff.
Yeah, like Dark Asta.
Which Except he already has the Black Clover grimoire anyway, so...
Yeah. Also, that's actually something else I forgot to mention. You can see when the one dude uses his magic that he has a Clover grimoire. So he's actually from this continent, or this country, empire, kingdom? What do they call it? Kingdoms, I guess, right?
Basically.
Clover Kingdom. So yeah, presumably at least that guy's from the Clover Kingdom.
Hmm.
I mean, Rades was too. Maybe it's possible they're all from it, but it seemed interesting to know where he's from.
You're talking about the Roots guy, right?
Yeah, the Magic Roots guy. When you see him pull his grimoire out, you can see a Clover mark on the one side.
Hmm. Yeah, I see that now. It's also just the three-leaf clover, so... Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think only...
Well,
as the
more
five.
People. I think that more people have four-leaf clovers than you know. I think.
The four-leaf clover is just what, an indication that they're powerful, or is it?
Yeah, I think. I don't think that they said like, oh, it's, you know, a once in a lifetime or whatever thing. I can't remember. That was like chapter one.
I can't go back and read that.
No, too much trouble. Anyhow, let's move on to Bleach, chapter. Chapter 647, The Theater Suicide. The Theater Suicide.
Yeah, I mean, there's times where I'm like, wow, this was a really introspective title that really just nails down all the subtext about this chapter.
Was there a theater in any way, shape, or form in this chapter? I don't think there was.
That's the true genius of it, Nick. You won't find out until Theater Suicide Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get enough of your love, baby. And then Theater Suicide 3. You got me, girl. And then Suicide Theater 4. Blue dabo dee dabo da.
You kind of like rhymed the first two.
That's his plan. I didn't take these. I just got advanced chapter titles from Kubo. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
I'm his muse.
So Shinsui is now on the run from... Super Release looks like a bullet with wings, Lilibaro, and he's bleeding everywhere. And every time he seems to hide behind something, the building gets blown up by giant bullets and stuff. And then eventually, when he like jumps into a building trying to get away, Lilibaro just like teleports in front of him, and he's like, "Oh, no weapon can hurt me." As Shinsui tries to fight back, and Shinsui's like, "I know, but what if I use a Kido blade?" And he uses Kido to launch, like, arcs of sharpness at him.
I like that that's his, like, big reveal, too. He's like, no weapon can hurt me. What about a Kido blade? Like, yeah, no, like, can't... I mean, if that's your big plan, it sucks, Shinsui.
I'm assuming that the implication is that Lilibaro is, like, completely Reishi protected now, so solid stuff, I guess, won't hurt him, so energy might, is what Shinsui's concluding. Anyway, this giant, like, wave bursts out from him and cuts apart the building that they're in, And then we cut away from them to Hirako's group, and Hirako is like, alright, the enemy stronghold, get your game faces on!
I thought you were about... I know, even though I read the chapter twice, I still felt like you were about to say, get your game on! This no, fucking... get your game on! No, come on in, win no. the fight!
That dub is the reason why Yu-Gi-Oh! Dubs aren't good anymore.
Play me my chums at the schoolyard!
I could go on for about 6 hours about how...
this dude has a train deck.
Shut up. No one had a train deck. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
didn't fucking the nerdy
no,
kid?
No, Sho did not have a train deck. One of his cards was a train. He had a Roid deck, a Vehicroid deck, which were different types of vehicles that looked like they came from Toontown in Roger Rabbit.
Oh. I think I saw one episode he played, and that was like his big car. Like, let's go train car! And I was like,
well,
this
that was,
sucks.
That was early on when everyone's ace card was a fusion monster with like 2000-something attack and a shit effect. So...
My card lets me look at one card in your hand and then put it back. Like this.
Oh, Petroid? That was like a face. Oh, God. Sho's deck sucked early on, okay? Eventually he was like, I combined four monsters into this, like, 4,000 attack monster. But up until that point, he sucked. Which is why he dueled, like, twice before getting Super Vehicroids. Anyway, so...
I love laying you Yu-Gi-Oh! The nerd out at times.
So Hirako is like, yeah, get your game face on, which is totally something I imagine him saying. Eh. Anyway, the Thor guy appears in front of them, and he's like, ah, oh, you have come a long way. And Hirako says, well, we didn't come to you. You came flying to us. Well, this is as far as you go. I do kind of like that. That's a little bit more... That seems more in character, Hirako, to be like, no, we didn't actually come towards you. You came to us. So there you go. As opposed to, get your game face on. What is he, like a linebacker hyping up the defense? What the fuck?
I feel like...
This is our house! This is our house! Yeah, society!
I'm just like, I'm trying to think of what the fucking, Drew Brees pep talk he'd always give in the huddle. Was always like, are we gonna kill them? We're gonna kill them! Like, that bullshit. You get fucking you get Ray Lewis doing it, takes on a different meaning.
Who's afterlife? Our afterlife! Who's afterlife? Our afterlife! Oh, God. If somebody draws linebacker Hirako, I would be very happy. Anyhow, so Thor guy says, if you wish to go further, you have to get past me. And so Renji tries to attack him. He just like, I'm going to use my Shikai to get your attention.
Gotcha!
Because this is how pointless Shikai are now. And he's like, I'll take you down and then we'll be on our way. And Hirako says, can I leave him to you? And Renji says, yeah, that's my plan. And I'm like, as soon as I say, why don't you guys just fight him together and beat him really quickly? He immediately stops them from running past him by expanding his cape to cut off their path. And says, a miracle could occur one-on-one, but you still won't beat me. So come at me, all of you. It's like, well, I mean, it's a good thing that you gave them that option, because otherwise Renji would die.
And it's like, no, I'm a pretty big deal. You guys maybe forgot I have a new Bankai, do you? Oh, that's right.
It's, I mean, like, Renji almost got killed by one of the guys at this guy's level. Not Renji, Mayuri almost got killed by one of the guys at this guy's level, and he is broken as shit. I don't think that Renji with his my Bankai is a giant snake,
well,
but it can be
now.
Destroyed really easily would work too well.
He improved his Bankai, Nick. It's a new one.
I know he did. I know
he did. But he almost lost to Mask Damascus, who I feel like is several levels lower than these guys, but it's
and
hard to tell since they're all their own different kind of broken.
And that was like the first guy Renji ever beat in the manga. I might be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure Renji never won anything before.
Did he fight anybody during the Arc? Before he got beat by Apollo? Because then it was that point where they fought like the mid-tier guys.
No, because Chad and Ishida and Ichigo each got one of them.
And then Rukia number 9. Who did he run into first then? Did he just run into Apollo?
I think he just ran to Zeoporo first. I think he just got, like, comic relief with, like, fucking Don Don Chaka. I think that was all that they did.
God.
Because, I mean, like, Rukia, the first person she ran to was Arenero.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I knew she ran into 9 right off the bat. I don't know.
So, yeah, Renji doesn't win very much. He gets his ass kicked a lot. I don't think that Masked Masculine would, yeah, anyhow. All right, so, Hirako is like, oh, you sound sure yourself. Yes, he does. Thank you for that observation, Mr. We're our house! We got killed him!
I also have to look this up now. What does Drew Brees yell in the huddle?
I forgot. Yeah, they have that their like whole routine, don't they? They did that. They like really focus on that during the Super Bowl year a few years ago. Anyhow, so Shinsui's like, you know, I wasn't expecting the Takedo to do any real damage, but man, not even a scratch. This is what you call being at the end of your rope. I'm all the way back to where we first arrived. I wonder if they've gotten far enough away. So he's got to commit suicide, basically, is what he's saying. And Nana is running towards him as he says, oh, I hope Nana doesn't get caught up into this. And he's like, all right, time to make the next move from the end of the rope. And he unleashes his Bankai. Like, okay, here we go, Chris. Let's see if I can knock this out in one. Katen Kyokatsu Kurumatsu Shinju. Oh! All that's right. What Drew Brees says now.
All right, stand back. Now it's my turn. Kaden, fuck. Kyokotsu Kuromatsu Shinju. Boom, right off the tongue. Which, of course, translates to Flower Heaven, Crazed Bone Spirit, Black Pine, Love Suicide.
That might be even more difficult to say. Flower Heaven, Crazed Bone Spirit, Black Pine, Love Suicide is the name of my debut album.
Do you remember the fucking, like, when I think Disney had the show, it was like Super Robot Monkey Team Hyper Force Go, and like the joke was how stupidly long the title was. I don't know how this managed to surpass it in what seems to be a completely serious moment.
Well, it's because all Bankai have the Shikai title and then an extra tacked onto it. Plus, Shinsui's titles have always been super long and weirdly poetic. Like, his Shikai release thing was like a fucking haiku or some shit. As opposed to, you know, Ichimaru's was like, Ikorose Shinso. You know, just like a verb and a noun. You know, a command and a noun. And Shinsui's was like, oh, so black teardrops falling among sakura petals or some shit like that.
I wish I could have been in the jump offices when they got this chapter and they had to translate it. They're like, holy shit, this just keeps going on. Like, you missed the heaven between flower and crazed bone spirit. Like, oh, Jesus, what does this mean? What we do see, though, is his Bankai almost looks like roots from a tree or something kind of shooting out, and then there's like the ghost of a woman or a shadow of a woman clasped around him, like kind of like,
I'm not even sure if it's necessarily a woman. I thought it might just be his shadow because he's got weird hair and hat and stuff. I don't know.
I guess I saw the chin looked a little feminine in the arms, but it definitely could be anything else.
It's a little bit difficult to see because, you know, he's not taking up very much space in the panel because a lot of attention is being given to, guess what, the background, where there is not much going on. It's actually better than a lot of Kubo backgrounds because there's this weird kind of, like, ethereal feeling to it. So, not a bad use of space. And also, there's a lot of attention being placed in the ground, which has all these, like, shadowy roots going through it, but I guess it's the black pine part of it. And also, of course, the title includes the phrase suicide, which I guess means that in order to do this, Shinsui is going to maybe kill himself or do something really deadly to everyone around him. I don't know.
I'd like to say it would follow, like, a logic, because a lot of the Bankai tended to, like, you know, Kumamura's Shikai basically made a giant attack, whereas his Bankai created a giant creature that could make attacks. So I'd like to think, like, oh, this must play some way off of children's games. But I was like, then again, fucking...
This looks like a hardcore kids game.
Yeah, I was like, then again, Soifon went from, like, my thing will kill you with two hits to I fire a rocket launcher. maybe it's something with... Because maybe it's, like, a kabuki woman that's with him, so maybe it's the notion of, like, evolving from children's games in the theater, like still playing pretend, essentially.
Maybe like a shadow puppet type of thing.
Yeah. I feel like they couldn't actually have Shunsui die here because beating...
Why not? Udahana's dead.
Maybe she'll come back, Nick.
No! Never!
But I feel like it's like this isn't the right moment for Shunsui to die. Like, I was like, what's there to really gain from him being like, I died to the X-axis who you all knew I was going to beat. I feel like we need him for stuff later on. Like, it would be more impactful if Hoshwaltz or Ewabach kills him in a battle or something like that.
It does feel like it would be really weird if like, you know, you're the Captain Commander now. Well, what happens? Well, he recruits Aizen, and he fights one guy. What a career. Okay.
Time to promote our next leader of the Gotai 13. Makarov, everybody! Oh, I didn't expect this. Just wait till I get really, really big! I know your former commanders were awful at this. Let me tell you. Shit, I don't actually have any accolades under my... Nobody here gets sick on moving trains, do you? Because we will send you on the first moving thing we can find.
Shinsui, like, on his tombstone, it just reads, had made more of an impact than Ukitake.
And it's just a shot of him, like, smiling at the fucking off the tombstone, like a twinkle in his teeth.
Oh man, Ukitake, yeah, that guy gave his life in order to save the world and make Juhabog more powerful.
It's interesting, like, when we get to the year recap for this series, it's gonna be like, yeah, you know, it started off, like, I already know, like, nothing fucking happened in this year, but I'm like, there's gonna be a point where I have to, like, figure out things that happened, and, like, midway through a fucking, like, side bullet point's gonna be like, oh yeah, Ukitake died, I think. Like, I guess he's just dead for good. I don't know, but I think that happened. By the way, Drew Brees apparently says, 1 for you, 2 for you, 3, 4, some more, 5, 6 for kicks, 7, 8 is great, 9, win, 10, again, and then they just says again over and over again. They just do like, again, win. That's what I think I was trying to
remember. Okay, so it's lame up until he reaches 9,
basically. Yeah, then it's like, win, again. Yeah, that's the cool part.
The rest is like, 1 penny, 2 penny.
The rest of it's like, 3, 4, cootie shot.
And we're just like, God, Drew, why do you have to do this every time? He's like, win again! And they're like,
I forgot how awesome it is at this point. Again! They're like slamming their heads together. They're like, that's great. I can't wait till next week. circle, dot.
What was it he said at the beginning again? I don't fucking remember.
every time next week comes around, like, oh, so like this shit again. All right, so let's move on to the most inappropriately titled chapter this week, Fairy Tale, chapter 457, Battle of the Nudes.
In order to make up for Battle of the Nudes, we have to have Grant cover wearing more clothes than he ever has in his entire life.
Yeah. The only character who would actually make sense for him to be wearing very little clothing is actually about as dressed up as possible. If he wore like a mask, you wouldn't see anything. You just see hair. So the chapter starts, and shockingly, Nick, Lucy is naked in her bathtub. She's agreed to the Battle of the Nudes, this naked battle, if you will. And
which she doesn't know the rules of, other than you must be naked.
Yeah, and there's no fight in it or anything. It just seems to be like, I'll just obey. So she's like, tell me what you're after. And Branda says, you're not cute enough. So she forces her to cosplay with a cat ears and cat collar with a bell on it.
Yeah, actually, for some reason. You see her produce the cat ears. I guess she had them shrunk somewhere. And she says, put this on. And the next thing we see is Lucy wearing the cat ears, but also the cat collar. And it's like,
and also something's going
meow. Where did the
meow
collar come from? Because she didn't take it out. So,
yeah. Yeah, something's going meow, too, which is unnerving, because it's not Lucy. And it's like,
I think it's just the, you know, one of those, like, sound effects played for comedy, you know?
I feel like that works in anime. I feel like in the manga, it's weird, because I'm just like, who's it coming from? Brandis replies with, oh my, I never thought you'd be that cute, which I didn't think was a part of her character at all, but apparently it is. Anyway, she notes, oh, I think I've seen you somewhere before, and we get a lot of gratuitous shots of the two of them naked, pressed up against each other a lot, but basically, yes. The gist is, Lucy is saying, like, oh, you probably saw me in Weekly Sorcerer, or maybe from the Grand Magic Games, or, you know, from all these different things. Branch is like, no, definitely wasn't that. Wash my back. It's more fan service. Do this. Brandish asks what her name is. She says Lucy. She tries to actually kill her then at this point.
Yeah, she
takes Aquarius's broken key.
Yeah.
Of all things, grabs it and says, I'm going to take out one of the 12. I don't know why. I'll give her balls. Like, I'll give her credit and balls for this, because it's definitely a bold maneuver. I don't know what she was going to do, because I'm like, it's not that sharp of a weapon, and I feel like nobody in this world, like, nobody in the world of fairy tales is ever going to die from a knife wound. Like, I'm just like, that's so mundane. You need to die because of a mountain.
Lucy, like, secretly thinking to herself, if I aim for the carotid artery, then she's...
She's like, I'll repair it with friendship, you bitch. Damn it. You guys have friends? Fuck, we're lost. But Brandish, before she can do so, notes Layla's daughter, and Lucy is stunned. She's like, you knew my mother? Mother?
You knew my mother? You knew my father?
She's Archie Bunker now. Hey, what's with all these different people in the guild? As a Native American, go back to your own country. Ah, lovable old racism. Brandish says, Layla's daughter. And apparently it's a big deal. She's a very, like, sinister kind of scowl when that happens. And all of a sudden, Lucy's house begins to shrink. She only just manages to escape, I guess, before the... I don't know how the rules would work. I guess maybe if she didn't get out of the house quick enough, it would crush her? Or...
But she's not shrinking alongside it.
Yeah, she's still the same size. I guess the house would probably break unless it keeps the same structural integrity. But either way, she escapes before the house gets too small for her. Of course, she's naked out in the street.
Didn't have time to dress, but yeah. Brandish did!
Yeah, Brandish apparently had time to grow a full fucking outfit.
Well, I mean, the producing is not the problem, because presumably, I mean, you know, having shrink ability would be very convenient. You could just, you know, reduce everything you wanted to carry to, you know, being the size of, you know, a small bag or whatever. So presumably she'd pull it out that way. But Lucy manages to barely have enough time to dash for the exit. And however little clothing Brandish wears, she does have, like, a freaking coat, and she strapped on her sandals and stuff like that. She dressed remarkably quickly. Yeah. Now, just, like, try to put on, like, you know, 5 different pieces of clothing in the span of, you know, 15 seconds. It would be very difficult.
And she looks like she's dried off, too. Doesn't look wet. Good for her.
She shrank the water, obviously.
Oh, silly me. She says, I never thought I'd stumble upon you here, which Lucy retorts with, what did my mother ever do to you? And Brandish doesn't really say much to that. She says it would be too much of a pain to explain. And before anything else can happen, Kana arrives, throws a bunch of cards at her, basically makes a joke about Lucy being in cosplay, which I'm like, I don't think it's really cosplay. She's naked with cat ears. I don't know what character that would be. But the big thing out of this, though, is that Lucy reveals that she has the dude, I forget what his fucking name is, but the dude who basically kept people from being able to summon magic, like spirits or anything like that, has the thing that he was trapped in, smashes it beneath her foot, which...
So he's dead now.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, oh, she just killed the shit out of him, good for you. I don't think he's dead, because he didn't explode into guts and blood. He just goes, ah! And then stops being functional. But, because he's out, Marin, actually, is his name, she says it right there, Lucy can not only use Celestial Spirit Magic again, and does so to equip Ares form, which I don't think we've seen before, but she has light, clothes on now, so that's a pretty big plus for her. But,
good move, Lucy.
Yes, but also, Urza can equip armor again, which really poses the question, how fucking huge was this dude's range of ability if fucking Urza's an airship outside the city, and this dude's magic still affected her? Mm-hmm. Also, if this was your big plan, why did you not put that guy in a safer place? Why did you not, like, have him strapped to walls back or something like that? Because now he's defeated and Urza can equip armor. She equips some wind god armor because, of course, she has that. Blows all the sand away. We cut away to the battle with Natsu and Geo where they're kind of talking about things. Happy notes like, oh, I didn't expect that to be as much of a workout for you guys. And Natsu's like, what do you want? I couldn't go all out. Geo says, I only fought with 1/100th of my power. So Natsu retorts with, yeah, well then I was at 1/10th power. And Geo says, You say you used more than? Which I actually like as a joke that Natsu doesn't understand how fractions work. But then... fuck, I can't remember his name, but Bajil or something like that.
Bajil?
Bajil, I don't know, fucking...
So Bajil and Batsu were fighting Bajil and
Natsu. Fucking Goofy Mouse sand guy pops back up, says, I'm not done yet, and it turns out he actually is done. Natsu punches him right in the fucking stomach, launches him into the air. So far, he actually crashes through a Geo ship, and Bakel, that's his name. And in that moment, a Geo is shocked, and Urza cuts him across the chest.
So he's dead now.
He can't possibly be. I can't. For all the big deal the Spring and Twelve are supposed to be, I can't imagine one of them got beaten like that. And essentially, like, yeah, Urza just needed him to get distracted for 1 second to beat him.
He is definitely making a lot of noise for someone who just got cut across the chest, which is, you know, where your lungs are. So, yeah, I'm sure he's fine.
I feel like he's not done yet, because if he is, then that's super disappointing. But, I don't know. It was such a weird chapter. I was almost expecting it to be more shameless, yet at the same time, it wasn't like, oh, what a pleasantly unshameless chapter.
No, it was about par for the course in terms of, you know, fairy tale fan service and inappropriate moments. But at the same time, I kind of got what I wanted out of it. I mean, I mentioned last time, I was like, I'm actually kind of intrigued where Branch is coming from this. And now it turns out she actually has a link to Lucy's past. And we actually do have a reasonable explanation for why she didn't immediately attack Lucy, why she showed up specifically in her home. It was like, yeah, I'm reminded of you somehow. And then she eventually figures it out just from being around her and stuff. So, yeah, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, I can dig it. It's not a bad chapter. Again, as long as it's not like, oh yeah, Urza just took out one of the 12. I was like, well, that was... okay, then.
Also, Lucy got to be competent.
Yeah, by and large, yeah. Yeah, she did.
Alright. Yay! Let's move on now. Okay, it's time for Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 139, Crumbling Institute. I'm gonna try not to just gush about this every single page, but it's gonna be a little bit of an effort. First off, that cover... holy shit.
Awesome as shit, man.
It's a picture, it's a full page spread of a zombie, but like his left half is basically transforming into a demon, like with, you know, skeletal form and, you know, muscly tendons and exposed and a wing extending out of it and stuff like that. So really cool representation of just how evil the guy is and stuff. It's a manga about cooking, but he's a demon.
And I will note that as of this point, because we're doing the podcast on hitbox.tv this week, hitbox.tv/RollOT, I put up a poll for what everyone's favorite chapter was, and currently Food Wars is winning, so I think you're not alone in greatly enjoying this chapter, Nick.
So, turns out that today is when a zombie's going to be given a big speech in front of the class. And so everyone, of course, is, you know, really hyped about it, and they're like, oh, what's he's going to say, and stuff like that. Soma recaps that Arato has been coming each day to bring Erina changes of clothes and so on and so forth. And we get, like, a little image of Arato wearing disguise sunglasses and sneaking around and stuff like that. And also, Alice and Kurikiba stop by to visit all the time. It looks like nobody's really figured it out yet, and Alice is just like, hey!
Like, oh, you know, the Aldini bros, like, now everybody's freaking shit out.
Especially tricking. If you keep on talking about it out loud to everyone. So, Fumio and Erina gather in the Polaris dorm's living room to watch the broadcast on TV, while it seems like almost everyone else is watching it actually live. And so, Azami addresses the school and he says, I'm going to tell you about my ideal world and how it relates to the revolutionary changes that will be sweeping the Institute. And so, you know, people at Polaris are like, you know, I don't, you know, we don't know exactly what he's going to say, but, you know, a person who is that terrible parent, you know, there's no way we can trust in him and so on and so forth. And Azami starts things off by saying, all classes, seminars, research societies, appreciation clubs, and any independently operating bodies among both students and faculty are disbanded. And everyone's like, what? What? What the fuck? And he's like, yeah, no independent study or anything like that. And everyone, of course, is crazy objective to it. Heads of these research societies coming forth and saying, come on, these have been great for us. They're great traditions, and also we use them to perfect our own cooking, and how can you say we have to get rid of them? And Azami just continues on, ignoring everyone, and says, I'm now establishing a new organization within the Institute. It shall be led by the Dean and the Council of Ten, and be composed only of students I personally select, an elite organization dedicated to the pursuit of new gourmet. There the divine will come together to share all things haute cuisine. This organization shall be named Central Gourmet Organization, hereafter known as Central. From now on, the members of Central shall determine the dishes that students will be allowed to make. Each of you no longer needs to worry about creating new dishes. And so, again, people are like, what the fuck? Are you serious? Who the hell would agree with this? Who would go along with this? And so he says, well, if you don't agree to comply, then you're going to be asked to leave, first of all. Well, that takes care of that partially.
Well, I like that he doesn't do, like, the chairman, what was his fucking name? Dory. Basically, the other guy, the first guy. His father.
Senzaemon?
Yeah, Senzaemon. When Senzaemon did his speech, it was, you either fucking get this shit together, or you're expelled. But it's clearly, deliberately part of his speech that he doesn't take that tone. He just says, anyone not willing to comply will be asked to leave the Institute.
It's a little bit of a nicer way of saying it, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, he is presenting a both carrot and stick method of presentation, where he continues on from there. He says, I think you guys are mistaken about this. Don't any of you realize how absurd and unfair the old system was? Under the pretense of survival of the fittest, any who fell behind even a little were mercilessly abandoned. That system ignored the fact that each chef is different, with different personalities and learning speeds. Don't you think that's dictatorial? From now on, classes will become the place where the teachings on Central are passed down. Everyone will receive the benefits of those teachings equally. In other words, in time, every one of you will learn and acquire Council of Ten level skills, ideas, and recipes. This institute is now a place free of meaningless confrontation, free of arbitrary expulsions, free of pointless divisions, free of fruitless competition. All of you are now free. Listen to me and listen carefully. None of you are merely common rocks. You are all important workers, vital to the future of this institute. Together, let us take our kingdom's gourmet to the next level. So, he's a pretty twisted kind of guy, isn't he? Very manipulative. I like the whole, let's get through the shock very quickly and then say, but look at it, it's gonna be so great, guys. You guys are gonna improve so much. You're gonna be learning from geniuses and stuff like that. You guys are never gonna have to be, put up with the stress of all these tests and competition and stuff like that. Come on, it'll be great. And, of course, there's some people who are like, this is bullshit. We can't accept this. And then they're like, well, no. It'd be pretty great to learn how to cook as well as fucking, Arina and Rindo and so on and so forth. So, and also they're like, also we can't really go, go against this because then we'll get thrown out. So,
yeah. What's interesting? He's like introducing food communism into the group. Like everybody gets it. And you can see the outrage initially, and of course people would be outraged at the start from his like explanation beginning with like, all right, everything you've done, we're canceling all of it. But when he starts going into his explanation, it is really cool to see the characters who start to kind of look at it in an interesting way. I particularly note that Todoroki, they close up on Todoroki when he's talking about how...
It's not Todoroki.
Or not Todoroki, fucking Megumi, whatever her stupid other name is.
Oh, wait. That is Todoroki, what am I thinking of? Wait a minute.
Todoroki's...
That's not Todoroki, that's...
Todoroki's from My Hero Academia.
Yeah, I've got their names confused because you threw me off. Oh, yeah, Megumi.
Anyway, Megumi. We close up on her and when there's during the bit of like how basically if you're...
Tadokoro! That's it.
There you go. When somebody gets left, even a little behind, then they're mercilessly abandoned. I feel like she might be relating to that statement a lot. Because she's someone who always feels like she's behind everyone else.
Yeah, she had to really struggle and she was on the verge of getting expelled before, Soma helped her out, basically. Mm-hmm. And now she's, a really talented and, up-and-coming student, but
yeah, you can understand that there are going to be a lot of people like her who might not have confidence that they can actually, you know, push on and succeed now.
Because it's weird. You could really just twist the speech a little bit, and you're like, this guy's not an asshole. Because at the start of the series, we were meant to believe that Senzaemon was the asshole, the guy who's just like, I'm going to, you know, smash all of you rocks together, and some of you will be diamonds, and some of you will just turn to dust. And you're like, what a dickhead. Well, this guy basically takes the same speech and is like, none of you are rocks. All of you are very important members to this. And at the same time, you're also like, we know enough about this guy, and we clearly see enough of his plan to be like, no, he's also an asshole, too. But it's interesting to get those two kind of sides of it.
I mean, the dichotomy, it would be obvious enough if you really think about it, but it is then spelled out by one of the members of the board and when this plan was brought up in the past through a flashback. I believe we've seen this guy before, but not a whole lot of them. Mr. Chappelle.
Yeah, he was the teacher at the very beginning, I believe.
And he, you know, was one of the ones who objected to it. And he said, you know, you're going to plunge the students into slavery. And at the time, he's like, no, I'm not. I am building a gourmand's utopia. And Mr. Chappelle is like, no, this isn't a utopia. Only a select few are permitted to create, and the rest are forced to merely copy. This demon king of gourmet has sundered the world of haute cuisine, creating nothing less than dystopia. And he imagined this as a zombie sitting on a throne of skulls that are wrapped in chains.
It's like something out of Death Note. Like, I feel like this image was in Death Note just for Ryuk.
You know, so, like, he's holding, like, the perfect world in this, you know, like, glowing orb of light in his hand, but everyone else surrounding it is, you know, plunged into darkness and forced to be slaves and so on. And, yeah, I mean, when you think about it, basically, it makes perfect sense why, you know, how well this would be used to keep people in order. Because there are going to be a whole lot of people who are just like, oh, you know, I don't know if I can actually continue on and succeed and stuff. Obviously, there are people who object, but what, you know, strength do they have to go against him? And, yeah, it's going straight from basically complete free enterprise to communism. Not socialism, specifically communism, because it's like, oh, no, everyone is important as long as you do exactly as I tell you to do.
Because he knows it won't just be the Council of Ten that'll be at the top of the
His hand-picked selections, too.
So you have to feel like some favoritism's going to come up in there.
Mm-hmm. And we get a bit of a montage where Men in Black become storming into all these different, you know, organizations, shutting them down. And one of the last ones we see is the Shiomi seminar. We don't see anyone actually enter it. We just see a sign. And then we cut to June, and she looks like her world's kind of been pulled out from under her. I feel really bad for her, actually. It's just like one panel, and she's just like, oh. And then they show up at the Polaris dorm as Azon of the Council of Ten shows up, you know, saying, oh, yes, Polaris dorm, the one student dormitory located on campus 20 or so years ago, it officially ceded from Totsuki Institute, operating in complete fiscal independence until today. Crush everybody here! The new Totsuki Institute doesn't need a place like this! And, you know, all the students who are there are, you know, gathered at the entrance, and Megumi looks, you know, pretty intimidated, and Soma looks really angry. I really like this chapter, if you couldn't tell, which you should be able to. But, you know, it's such a great way of establishing all these different motivations for why people are going to want to go against Azami while establishing his plan and why it would be so effective and stuff. And, you know, you establish, like, okay, everyone in the Polaris Storm, of course, is going to want this guy out of power. But also, you know, you've got Ikumi, you know, that research society that she had grown really close to is now being shut down, so she's going to be motivated to work against him. And also, June has basically lost her home, so Hayama's going to want to go against him and stuff. It's, yeah, I mean, there you go. It's like, you got like a dozen different important characters all set up for this.
All you needed is like a shot of one of the guys in the black suits kicking dirt in like the Demon Brothers cat's face. Like, it gets on the, like, a stage, like, get out of here, you stupid cat! Kick more dirt into its face! They're like, oh!
And also, you know, this serves as a great explanation for why Kuga and Ishiki didn't go along with Azami's plans. It was specifically because, you know, Ishiki has ties to the Polaris Storm, and Kuga as a part of the Chinese Food Society. Mm-hmm. So, there you go. That's such a great chapter. I freaking love it.
It was very good. I enjoyed it greatly. And I also enjoyed the context this kind of gives to a few chapters back when Azami gave his introduction speech. And afterwards they were like, oh, he's really putting on a show. He's like, no, that's just who he is. That's just, he's talking just as naturally as he would to the rest of us. You know, that big evil speech he did was no different than what he did here. It's just how confident he is in his plans. If you take that same context to this, it's like, oh man, this dude really is just like a confident fuck who really is like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to start off by really being a dick to you, but by the end of it, you're all going to kind of see that this is what you want in the end. Like, for a guy who clearly found some way to buy himself into the Council of Ten and get their favor, it fits in really well. He'd be just as manipulative to the rest of the student body.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm so looking forward to this because this is going to be, like, the first really important, big Shokugeki no Soma arc that we're going to cover all the way through on the podcast. Obviously, the other really big one would have been the tournament arc, but, you know, we only came in towards the end of that one. And I really like, you know, the kind of the stuff that we've had building up to this. It feels very, you know, standard kind of battle shonen, you know, because you have the tournament arc, then you have, you know, Soma failing at the end, but the stakes aren't really that high, so, you know, you can just have him go and get better and stuff. They have the training arc with Stagiaire Week, or Stagiaire Month, I guess. However the fuck long it was. And then he comes back, his skills have improved, they have a minor arc to establish that, and also to help cement the villains of the next arc. And then you throw things into motion after establishing some of the stakes. So yeah.
Good on.
Seriously looking forward to seeing how this whole thing unfolds. So yeah. I feel like with all the amount of praise that I heap on Shokugeki no Soma, I mean, there's that joke that we and specifically you fillet World Trigger on a regular basis, but it feels like I should be like stuck in front of that chapter one picture of the girl getting tentacle raped by Soma's cooking and me just being like, this is a good series.
Nick, just like you approvingly nodding at that panel.
Yes.
I agree. big thumbs up.
This manga can do no wrong.
Perfect.
Alright, let's move on to My Hero Academia. Number 63, Yayoruzu Rising. Oh god, I didn't realize how awkward that would be to say until I just said it. Yayoruzu Rising.
Better than The Dark Knight Rises, though. We'll admit that.
Well, it is definitely better than that movie was.
Unless All Might becomes Bane.
Oh, where are you going? Envy, disgust, they feel all of it.
Oh, Deku, yes, I see that you are working together with Bakugo.
Time for a Detroit smash! Brawler.
So, we get a little bit of a kind of, like, I guess, audio-only flashback as Deku puts their plan to action to use one of Bakugo's gauntlets to attack All Might. This had, you know, the back and forth conversation that they had, you know, before they reached the conclusion to do this. And, but then Deku unleashes the blast while saying, I'm sorry! Which is pretty funny. And he nearly blows out his shoulder doing it. Like, there's a little pop, as almost as if it's been dislocated. And so he's like, Jesus Christ, you know, Gachan's been doing this? Which, you know, it's like, does he have the ability to resist his own explosions, I guess, on top of having explosive powers?
They need to walk a mile in each other's shoes.
So yeah, then they skedaddle after that because they know that that's not going to be enough to take out All Might. And the dog is barking now. And so All Might's like, so they, you know, reached a compromise between running and fighting. Well, that's not too bad. And also, they even managed to direct the blast towards where I had already, you know, blown up some buildings and stuff so they would minimize further destruction. So, yeah, good job.
That was very considerate of them. Which I have to assume was all Deku.
Probably. But so he's like, oh man, you know, those kids are both really clever, but I was sure that it would break down when they were thrown together. Envy, disgust, inferiority, and awe, conceit, and rejection. From what I've been told, they've both been dealing with those sorts of feelings, and now they probably don't know what to say to each other. That they could put those issues aside so quickly, surely this is a great first step towards cooperation in the future. Anyway, I'm gonna go kick their asses now.
Yeah, it's time to kick their ass!
We cut over to Todoroki's location, where they're still continuing with Todoroki and Yagurozu's plan for her to just create these little gadgets up until Aizawa, his power negation, kicks in when he gets nearby. And she's making Matryoshka, I guess, is how you say it. The Russian dolls with the little dolls inside of them, basically.
Nesting dolls, I think they also go by.
Right, right. So.
And also, I finally figured out this character again. Like, I don't know why. I guess I just always misunderstood from, like, the one shot of her you get during the villain invasion we read a while back. But I forgot that her power is to create clothes, like, basically create things out of her skin. Mm-hmm. Which explains why she doesn't wear much clothing, because I guess...
Despite her character of being kind of shy and awkward, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, for the longest time, I was like, why does she have such a revealing outfit? I was like, oh, because she wants to have as much skin basically available as possible so she can create as much stuff or create it from any place necessary.
Yeah. And it turns out she's also got, like, a little carrying pack as part of her uniform so that she can carry around stuff that she produces. And she's, like, stuffing her belt full of these Matryoshka dolls and stuff. So Todoroki's like, okay, yeah, you know, just, you know, keep that up and let me know if it's your power starts acting weird. And Yagurozu says, you know, I'm surprised that you were able to hammer out a strategy against Aizawa Sensei just like that. You're always figuring out the best approach with your judgment. And Todoroki's like, it's not a big deal. And she says, oh, well, you know, we got into the academy under special recommendation. We had the same starting point, but when it comes to practical hero skills, I still haven't shown anything worth mentioning. You can just, like, she doesn't do it, but you can sort of see her, like, tapping her fingers together. It's like, oh, I'm kind of pathetic and stuff.
Yeah, I'm no good. Nobody likes me.
And, you know, she's like, oh, I haven't really shown myself. You know, your leadership got me through the Capri Bell, and then Tokuyami just knocked me out of the tournament immediately. So Todoroki thinks it's kind of caught off guard when he realizes that her ability is not working. She's been distracted by going into this thought pattern. As Aizawa arrives, pulling a Spider-Man impression. Like, seriously. He's hanging down with the legs spread and stuff, like Spider-Man does all the time. And, he just immediately pounces on them and wraps up Todoroki with these bandages and stuff. And Todoroki's like, oh, Yagurozu, run! Go! And immediately he is neutralized as Aizawa, like, hauls him up and suspends him over these telephone wires and just kind of leaves him there. And so Todoroki says, look, if you go away, then I'm just gonna break the bindings really quickly as soon as you're I'm outside your range. And Aizawa says, yeah, but I'm gonna put caltrops in the ground, so happy landing.
Yeah. I don't know why, like, I was like, Are caltraps that dangerous to him? Like, can he just fucking shoot,
well,
like,
he would fall fire? He would fall about 15 feet, and I don't think he would be able to actually produce fire while he's bound up, because I think he only has produced it from, like, his hands when he directs it and stuff, I think.
Yeah, but couldn't he just create, like, a ramp of ice that, like, slides him basically into a safe location? Isn't he, like, Iceman, kind of?
Well,
I think the implication,
I think, is the fact that his hands are still bound, so he would have to time it very, very well. He could pull it off, but it would be difficult. I don't know. Or maybe he's not smart enough to think of that. I don't know, he's a kid.
Yeah, fuck that kid. Fuck children. Hashtag infamous planet.
So Aizawa says, you know, this isn't going to be like when you face the hero killer, because there's two of you, I know there are two of you, and I know what your quirks are, so you can bet I'm ready to counter what you do. You're not going to catch me off guard. So, yeah. Also,
saying,
you know,
it's contact to create ice. I don't remember that, but they're very likely right.
And Aizawa also says, you know, you kind of taken on way more responsibility in this than maybe you should have. You know, it's nice that you were thinking of her, but maybe you should have actually listened to what she had to say. And Jeruk is like, huh? listen to my teammate? What mean?
Zaw?
We cut over to Yairozu, and she's running, and she's panicking. Like, a billion thoughts are racing through her head. She's like, oh, should I go back? Is this the right way I should go? What do I do? What do I do? Where am I even going? And Aizawa starts talking to her as he's, like, web-slinging towards her. You know, it's like, you know, you've lost self-confidence since the sports festival and so on. And he immediately snags her by the wrist with one of his bandages. So Yairozu... but Yairozu realizes that her power hasn't been negated yet, so she creates, like, this ring from around her wrist in order to get the bandage off of it, which is a pretty cool little counter. It's like she kind of... It almost looks like she makes a spool or something. I don't know. It disappears very quickly. And then she runs back towards Todoroki. And basically there's just this recap of Yairozu's character, because she's been in the background this whole time and stuff like that. Oh, you know, she's... got these confidence, and but she lost her decision making and so on. So Aizawa's like, you know, she is still just a teenager, so it's understandable.
I do like that line too. Like, you know, she's still a kid.
Yeah,
you know? She has insecurities just as much as any, you know, teenager is going to. Unless you're Bakugo,
right? And Aizawa says, you know, bring back that confidence is my role as the villain, isn't it? So Todoroki is sitting there with his thoughts like, I'm a bad teammate. I should have listened to her. And then Yairozu shows back up, and Satoru says, oh, he's gonna come back, you know? And she's like, I don't know what I should do. And Todoroki says, you had a plan, right? I'm sorry, you know, I didn't actually talk to you, and so on and so forth. So whatever your plan is, you know, do it. And Yairozu is like, well, if your strategy didn't work, why doesn't mine work? I voted for you for class president! Aww.
That is actually, it is an extremely cool moment that he has here, where he's, because Todoroki's already basically been told, like, you fucked up, kid. You didn't ask her what her power or what her plan was. He's had a moment a while to kind of stew on those thoughts. So when she shows up, has that lack of self-confidence again, he comes in with something that's like, hey, you know, this little bit that probably was almost like an afterthought at the time, like, oh, hey, look at these characters who got more than one vote. I wonder who voted for them. Like a callback to that encourages her and shows like an unseen connection these two characters had, and just the amount of respect Todoroki's had for her. It's like a cool little moment too, like really, like, yeah, you know what, he's, you know, you're intimidated by this guy, but he's had a lot of faith in you as well.
Yeah. And so Yairozu just kind of scolds herself really briefly, but then she starts taking the dolls out of her belt. And she says, close your eyes, Todoroki! And it turns out that instead of having smaller dolls inside of them, they have flash grenades in them. And they go
awesome. Is there really, like, no limit to her power in that? Like, she can actually just make flash bang grenades?
Apparently.
That seems so broken.
I think I'd have to look at her little...
Like, she can just launch shit out of her body? That's awesome, but God, that seems broken.
Maybe she actually was carrying them before, and so she was only making the dolls and then hiding the grenades inside of them. I don't know.
If it's that, it makes sense. But I was like, aren't there, like, people who's like, I'm a technical genius? I'm like, who cares? This woman can make grenades out of her skin.
She can just be a grenade launcher. With infinite ammo.
Yeah. As long as she don't fucking throw a burger on her, she's fine.
So the flash grenades go off. Aizawa is blinded long enough so that she's able to lower Todoroki safely to the ground, and she says, I do have a plan that's sure to lead us to victory. And that's the end of the chapter. So, unexpectedly, a little Yairozu focused chapter, and she got her chance to shine.
It's a very good chapter.
It's still getting her chance to shine, apparently, and she's got a plan after this.
It is a very good chapter, and I'm glad, because we got a little bit of the Deku stuff, but honestly, even though I do want to eventually see the relationship between Deku and Todoroki, fucking Deku. Bakugo and Deku get solved. There's too many characters with T names, even though the character I was trying to reference didn't have a T in either of his names. I do want to see that get concluded, but all these other scenarios too also have very interesting relationships that I'd like to see. Like, this is a big one, obviously. I'd also like to kind of jump back to Asui and fuck, it's the other character's name, Tokoyami?
Tokoyama.
Tokoyama. So close, too. But that's what I'd like to cut. I'd like to see what Uraraka's doing. I want to see what Ida's doing. Like, it just, like, I feel like it's cool to kind of bounce around these things. Because it seems like it's a pretty important moment for all these characters. Like, this whole test was basically constructed to provoke character development. So it's
right,
cool
because,
to kind of go back to these.
They're concerned, the teachers are concerned with the students being prepared to take on villains. So they're not just going to be like, oh, you guys are suck, fail. They're trying to rapidly improve them by addressing their weak points and trying to get them strong very quickly. So, So it seems like, by design, we're going to see a lot of character growth through this. And I looked up Yairozu's power. She can just create any non-living material as long as she has an understanding of how something is made.
And since she's, like, one of the smartest people in class, she's probably got a pretty good knowledge on how a lot of things are made. She's like, yeah, I watched the whole series, how stuff's made, and I can just make all stuff now.
So she, I guess this is, I mean, this makes sense for her to have, like, a self-confidence problem. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, if you could create anything, what would you do? It's like, I would make another one of me so we could match in a bigger black hole. Oh, God.
That is great. She's like, I'm the Grammy who actually needs to work at it so I don't become Grammy.
Right. That would be a great little chapter. You start off as Grammy and then you become a competent character.
That's your end goal.
Okay. Let's move on to... We have no One Piece this week, so we're going to go straight into Toriko Gourmet 343, Direct Hit Dawn!
Actually, Nick, instead of talking about Toriko, why don't we just talk about what One Piece's chapter would be like if it was in this issue? I think they get on top of the elephant, and then they find there's, like, elephant men who live on Zoe. And they all use their trunks to shake hands and wackily, uncontrollably grope the people. It's like a silly joke. They're not intending to do it. It's just like, you know, surprise tentacle groping. But it happens to everybody. So, like, Frankie gets the most of it because he has the most body.
Yeah, they're just going for they're just going for surface area. So because women's bodies are more curved, that means that there is more space to be groped. But then they get to Frankie, and he is constantly molested.
Yeah,
because he is like a giant cyborg dude.
They're like, this guy has so much. So
Bartolomeo's crew, being skinny fucktards, would get like no time whatsoever if they were still around. So.
Yeah. Well, also in my version of One Piece that happened this week, Bartolomeo joined them as well, and he's like, I'm just gonna join the crew permanently. I sunk the rest of my friends down in the ocean so they wouldn't bother us.
So Frankie gets bothered a whole lot, and then they discovered that Robin can make more limbs, and so she gets groped a whole lot more because she theoretically has an infinite body for them to check out. And Luffy, his stretchy powers also cause him to be constantly bothered as well.
Yes, until eventually Chopper shows up, goes full giant monster form, and they're like, well, I'm all over this.
I'm sorry, we've got shit to do. Also, they're blind. So it's like that, like, Seven Blind Men tale.
That's how they get around with?
Right, so it's like the Seven Blind Men, they discover the elephant, but each of them thinks it's a different thing because they don't feel the whole elephant except for the last one. And so they're all blind, and that's why they have to feel out people they encounter so they understand what they look like and what they are.
I like this chapter. Nick, we need to...
What a great chapter of Toriko that was.
We need to send a letter to Kubo.
Kubo! Oda! You were like, can I draw them on a black background? Yeah, I guess you could. Like, okay.
I guess we can't stop you.
Slime attacked Acacia's monster thing. That was what happened to Toriko.
I think we should send it to Kubo anyway. Like, look, you need some help. We're giving you a sweet One Piece chapter to compete with Oda with.
There was a time lag in Blue Grill because a whale is eating stuff and sucking up the ocean. And Don Slime was like, well, that tournament happened, so let's go revive Ichiryu. That was the chapter.
I love that it's a lot of Don Slime, and yeah, they basically just explain, like, yeah, all of Komatsu and everybody was like, were in the back channel for
decades. They went and trained at 200 times Earth's gravity or some shit.
Yeah. But they, like, cut away to, like, being like, oh, no, Gourmet Hermit, what's your name? And the other guy, like, no, you don't need to fight. We've clearly proven your worth, and we're all going to team up for this. It's like, you didn't want to intervene when Yuta murdered the other guy?
No, that guy was an asshole. Fuck him.
You didn't need that dude? The other five shell chef or whatever bullshit for this?
No, all the other...
You didn't need Condor Window to defeat fucking Acacia?
Yeah, all those other guys are actually dead. It's just the fifth chef that he felt like spearing.
Yeah, those guys just like, oh god, they're poisonous mushrooms. You're going to force feed them down my throat. And then Donslan's like, no, no more. Too much bloodshed today. Like, really? On the fifth match? They'd already won at this point. They killed four of us.
It's like, look, I flipped heads for this guy, so he'll live.
Yeah. We all love you, Hero Chef Azardy. Azardy.
We didn't really need that name anymore anyway. So, yeah. On the World Trigger. World Trigger, Chapter 119 of Tokator, Part 5. I almost said a different number for some reason. Yuzuru is hanging out with Chika and company, and he's like, oh, you know, come on, here's our training area. And we're introduced to Kagura Squad's operator, Hikari. She likes to sleep.
I feel like she's a pretty stereotypical fangirl. Like, this is a fangirl for World Trigger. They should see themselves a little bit in this character. Walk in her room, she's just surrounded by fucking magazines and what looks like, takeout and shit, tissues. She says everything right there.
Also, she says hubba wubba when petting the cat.
Hubba, does she?
Yeah, she does. Or she goes wubba hubba, I guess.
Oh, no, wubba wubba. Aw, cats are adorable, Nick.
Cats are great. Like, and she's like, hey, do you want to join me at the Katacha table and eat tangerines? And Yuzuru's like, we need to use the training room. No.
I love, like, when she first sees fucking Yuzuru, she's like, you brought girls over? You?
So, oh, you should have told me. Should I call Zoe and Kage? No.
I feel like she's, like, spiritually his big brother as well. It's just like, you brought your girls over? Do you want me to make you a steak?
What?
Yeah, you just...
Because you're big and strong, you've got to eat meat. You're, like, 5 feet tall.
No, it's for you just had sex for the first time steak.
I have never heard of such a thing.
It was just the thing where I'm from. It's a pretty sweet tradition if you want to pick it up.
I don't know. I'm a very gentleman don't kiss and tell kind of guy. Maybe that's why I've never heard of it. Anyhow.
More
so,
steak for me.
Also, Hikari also says narg, which I think is a great verbal expression to use. She just sees the girl and goes, narg! Possessed by the spirit of Pinky from Pinky and the Brain. Anyhow, Chika goes to train with Yuzuru. And so he's like, here, use this sniper rifle. So he says, you know, I think that, you know, because Rancor is a part of a training, and you realize that you're not shooting flesh and blood when you go into the rank wars, but maybe you're reacting to your knowledge of whether or not the target is going to blow up, then that is okay when you do the target practice as opposed to when you do rank wars and stuff. You know, even though you know that you're fighting against Dragon Bodies, you just can't help but think, what if the target is alive? And so, you know, we've got these safety measures on these border trigger bullets so that, you know, if a bystander gets hit, they're only going to be knocked unconscious from the pain of the impact. But you still have a strong aversion to hitting people anyway. And a lot of people go through that. So it's regular for a lot of people. Hikari, change these trigger settings for me. He's like, oh, you can't do anything without me, can you? Whatever.
She's got a case of bedhead, too.
Yeah, well, she's been sleeping, and she was too busy cuddling the cat to comb her hair.
And she's still cuddling the fucking cat.
Or brush her hair, whatever she would do. I don't know. I guess brush. I understand that brushing is good for lots of hair. I don't fucking know. Anyhow, Chika gets...
Next, I comb my mustache. That's my extent of hair knowledge.
That's basically the only grooming I do, is everything below the nose. Anyhow. Chika gets a black lightning... And so Yuzuru says, yeah, try that. And she shoots a target, and a weighted bullet appears. And Chika's like, oh, I remember this from, like, 100 chapters ago. When was the last time lead bullets actually showed up?
To be fair, actually, it showed up when Yuma fought... Fuck, what was his name? The old man during the invasion arc. Visa? Was that his name?
Visa, yeah.
Yeah, he used them against him to basically, like, chain down one of his, like, his attacks. Mm-hmm. So he did use it there. And I know that's one of Miwa's specialties, too. He basically, like, uses it to weigh down people and then, I think, goes in for the kill.
So Yuzuru says, yeah, this is the lead bullet.
Oh, I say that as though it happened like a week ago, even with that fight with Visa, that was still like half a year plus ago.
He says, you know, it doesn't actually, you know, defeat the opponent, but it will weigh them down and so on and so forth. So it's not going to hurt anyone, even if they are flesh and blood. So I think that even Amatori would be able to shoot it. It can't be blocked with a shield, and so it should be easy to get a hit too. And they're like, oh, why doesn't everyone just use this? Well, you can't use it with a bagworm. So if you start sniping with it, you're going to be found out on the radar. But considering you shoot giant fucking explosions, you'll be found out anyway. So it's better if you shoot and hit, then. Also, the reason why no one used it is because of muzzle velocity. Because it uses a ton of Tryon because of the weight effect, and range and speed are decreased. Sniper triggers guarantee range through this gun structure itself, but if the bullet is too slow, it's not going to hit. But, because you have a tremendous amount of Tryon, you can use the lightning with it. And the lightning, sniper rifle, the more Tryon you put into it, the faster the bullet is, as opposed to the other two, which one, the Ibis is more powerful, the Ygritte has more range and stuff. So, Yuzuru's like, yeah, you know, if you combine these together with your amount of Tryon, you should be able to use it. And, yeah. Also, this wasn't my idea. It was my mentor's, Adahara. And she didn't have enough Tryon, so she couldn't use the idea. And she was like, okay, can I keep practicing? And she starts to do so. And I always forget this character's name. Every single time I forget her name. The cat girl.
Zuho, I think. Yeah. Natsumi,
yeah. And she's like, oh, you're so nice. You know, Chika's your B-rank rival, and you gave her your mentor secret. Do you have a crush on her? No! I just love it, like, I was like, I knew exactly where this was going, but just, like, her covert little, do you have a crush on her? I really did. It did crack me up the first time I read it. But Yuzuru is privately just, he doesn't want Chika to fall the same way that Hatahara did. So, it was a nice sentiment.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I don't know why. I guess I should have expected it. I was like, no one's ever done anything with the lightning before. Of all the sniper rifles we've seen in the series, I don't think the lightning's ever really shown up in any impactful way before this at all.
Well, because sniper rifle bullets is always just like, well, you get sniped, so, oh, the bullet goes faster. Well, if the bullet goes slow normally, yeah, there you go.
Well, the thing about the lightning was that it was not meant for that kind of kill either. Like, it was meant to basically wear people down. It was kind of like a chip shotgun.
Right.
So I was always like, people just don't really use it a whole lot. I wonder why I was kind of introduced in the series. But now I can kind of see, like, oh, that's actually a really interesting way to use it. You basically just combine it with lead bullets and let the fact that her giant Tryon cannons can support that strategy come into effect. So she can still be helpful without actually having to kill people. Yeah, it's very interesting. I like this as a character growth moment maybe not character, but a little bit of a character growth moment, essentially. But basically, Chika taking that step forward into becoming an impactful character for her team. Who the fuck voted for Bleach in the goddamn best chapter of this week?
Find them and kill them.
Who did that? How dare you? I just saw that. I lost all of my train of thought on that now.
Oh, God. All right, We then cut away from that to Yuma and Osamu talking with Enidora, who has a Sharpie strapped to one of his little spider-leg things.
Which is kind of adorable.
It is kind of adorable. He's like, meh. And he's apparently very dexterous with it, too, because he draws out these long fucking diagrams and shit. We don't actually see what his drawings look like, but seemingly he's drawing out the structure of how Tokutora's government works and stuff. In extreme detail. But he says basically it's like, you know, it's like a fiefdom. There are subordinate houses under the dominion of each feudal lord and many more beneath them. And there are four big groups of smaller houses and all of them claim their own territories. So Sama's like, you mean that there are people struggling within the country? And everyone's like, yeah. Duh. in every country like that. They cooperate when they go to war, though. And one of the four lords is the jerkface Hyrene. It had to be like a much tamer version of what he actually said in Japanese or something.
I hope it is jerkface. I hope like he's like, I'm a really like sadistic, mean person that I do not swear.
Well, Japanese doesn't have its own curse words.
They don't have a direct translation for jerkface?
No, they kind of do. They have basically cursing is a form of being impolite. So you would kind of, instead of referring to Hyrene as like Sama or San or something, you would call like Hyrene Teme, which is basically the rudest way you can address someone. I don't know if that's what actually happened in Japanese or something like that, but people interpret that a lot of different ways. And so sometimes it's like that fucking asshole or jerkface.
I mean, I feel like every sentence Haruma ever said must have had to end with Teme, then.
I'm not sure. I think I'd have to check. Maybe he actually said fucking. I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he said fucking assholes to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that is also something in Japanese. It's like, there are some things that cannot be expressed in our language, so let's borrow the fuck out of English. Yeah. I don't know. I'm making a grand supposition. I have not seen the actual text. But that is a possible explanation for why he said that. Anyhow.
Alisa says Inadora calls him Kusoyaru in Japanese.
So, Kuso is like damn. So.
There you go. Also, Mets are up 6, so suck it, Cubs. Okay. Oh. Back to the Future couldn't save your asses.
Oh, God. Anyway, he says that Hyrie's been trying really hard to gather trigger users for his house, because the more trying you have, the bigger the territory you can control. You can keep more small fry citizens. They got a big haul of meat and monkeys. I bet Hyrene was pretty pleased. So if Tokator is at peace, but there's a problem. In a few years, the planet's god will be almost dead. This is trouble of the highest order. There are no territories on a dead planet. Everyone will go down together. But this was an opportunity for the lords. If they can find the new god themselves, that achievement alone would award them power in the next generation. So the four lords went on quest to find the next sacrificial god. And that's the story up to now. So Yuma says...
The entire time this is happening, the fucking Game of Thrones theme is playing in my background. We're like, do-do-do-do-do-do.
House Hyrene!
I'm like, oh my god, you made World Trigger even cooler!
And Adora's like, House Hyrene of the jerk faces.
our house motto. We are kind of shitty like that. Like, their sigil's just a dude who's just, like, shrugging next to a broken vase that's clearly yours. Like, whatever. I want this to happen, too, because I'm, like, melding the worlds. I'm like, oh, Davos Seaworth for Tamakoma 2! Why have I not seen it before? Even though I'm like, hey, really just get another Osamu, ultimately.
So, Yuma says, I thought that you were telling us about Husei, and Naruto was like, shut up, albino shrimp! Great name for him.
He's like, you called him jerkface. Your insult for me was so much meaner.
Well, you called me Inadorad, so fuck you. Inadorad sounds like a cool nickname, though.
Yeah, I feel like he's improved.
It's like he's calling you Rad. So Inadora continues, Hyrene is a pessimist by nature. He planned for the future, assuming the mission would fail. Someone fit to be a god would be rare indeed. So besides the mission, he had a backup plan. If they couldn't find the next candidate for God, he would make his subordinate with the highest Trion levels the next God. So someone's like, oh, you were like, betray his own people. And yeah, Inadora says, yeah, you know, this, you know, it doesn't generally work. You know, sacrifice your own and your subordinates get upset. And if you lose such a big Trion user, the whole house loses power. But Hyrene wanted the power to be his, even if he had to turn a blind eye on that. And he was like, well, wouldn't that cause a fight with the house the sacrifice is from? And I was like, yes. And that's why Hyrene marooned the mongrel who was most likely to bite him in the butt. That's more censorship going on right there. He said ass. So anyway, the plan was to sacrifice the Lord of Eren House directly under Hyrene. Husei is master. Cut over to Husei in Tamakoma 2's basement, and he's got a little map of all the different orbiting worlds and stuff. I guess, getting a scope on the situation coming up. But yeah, politicking. Irene's a jerk. He is a jerk face.
He is quite the jerk face, and now we finally get the answer to why he was pretty happy that they just left Husei there at the end of the invasion arc. Like, it was intentional. Like, no, leave him there. We did what we accomplished for. Like, it's a good way to kind of explain that and give some information to it. As much
also,
as I...
And also explains why Visa was kind of respectful towards Husei. Presumably, you know, different people underneath Irene would have different opinions on that house and stuff.
But didn't they also call him Lord Husei as well?
Well, because he is, I guess, I would assume, very high up in that house then.
Yeah, that's what I'm gathering. So now we kind of get explanation as to why he was called Lord Husei, but it was still
maybe
like,
he was like...
Yeah, leave him behind.
Like, maybe he was like second in line or something like that, if he was one of the ones that would cause trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's very slow kind of chapter, but very revealing as well, with both in terms of, you know, developing stuff for the future in terms of Chica's fighting, and also setting up this whole thing with, you know, fleshing out the enemies that Border's going to have to go up against, for, I guess, long term.
Mm-hmm.
So, good stuff. It was among my favorites this week, although Food Wars, I just thought was amazing, so that was my favorite.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah. We put up that poll.
I fucking wanted One Piece.
We put up that poll, or you put up that poll specifically, at the beginning of the episode, or I guess before we started recording. It was like, oh, what was your favorite chapter this week? And Food Wars won out, but it was very close between it and My Hero Academia and World Trigger. All very good chapters this week.
Yes.
So, yeah. It was a good week overall, and I'm glad that, yeah, good stuff. I'm just happy with the manga this week.
Yeah, and I guess it's actually one thing I forgot to mention. We haven't talked about it in a couple weeks, but if you didn't catch it, the Shonen Jump team was at New York Comic Con. They had Kishimoto there for a whole bunch of events as a panel, I think, with him. But they did make some announcements. I know they announced Black Clover will be going digital, so you can get that digital. But they also notes they're going to be translating and bringing over Kuroko's Basket and Haikyuu. So if you're sports fans like us and you've been wanting to kind of see those series and see them get translated, they announced they are going to be doing it. I don't think either of them are coming into the magazine, but they are coming over, and I don't know when they're supposed to come out. It's usually a pretty long kind of time from announcement to when it actually comes out, but it's something to look forward to. I think I haven't read much of Kuroko's, but Haikyuu was a fantastic series. Really inspirational, a lot of great characters in that. And maybe when that comes out, maybe I can actually get back to reading it like I was back in the day. So,
yeah. Also, someone sent us word about Toho, a movie studio in Japan, registered a website domain for myheroacademy.com, I guess. So this is starting up the rumor mill. It's like, oh, they're going to produce a My Hero Academia anime series, which I don't know, because Toho actually distributes movies almost exclusively. So maybe there are plans for an anime with an eventual film tie-in. I don't know. But, you know, registering a website name, that's... Don't necessarily be like, oh, there's definitely going to be an anime coming out soon. Like, well, we'll see. Yeah.
And also one other thing I haven't... I forgot to bring up. If you're interested, there is now a Naruto app. Which essentially every day you get a new chapter of Naruto for free in it. It's a free app. I think the first chapter is always available, and then every day you get a new chapter that I think stays on your phone for like 7 days or something like that. So if you're interested in reading Naruto, if you're a big Naruto fan who kind of just wants to refresh on it over and over again or anything like that, you can get the Naruto app and enjoy it. So just something to keep in mind.
There's a little extra stuff going on in the world, but that's going to do it for this week. Of Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you everyone for joining us for the live recording, which we did on hitbox.tv/RoloT this week, because apparently Twitch was just being a derp all today. But we normally do record the show on twitch.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We do sometimes, however, have to change things up, so follow us on Twitter to stay updated. He is at RoloT, I'm at YRolerofTime, and you can also follow the at WMR Podcast Twitter account, where Chris does basically exclusively manga-related stuff. Also, be sure to check out past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and subscribe to us on iTunes, and make sure to leave a comment and rating so that we can beat the woodworking podcasts.
No one left us a review, so they win. You know what's happened, guys?
We live in a world dominated by Azami and woodworking podcasts.
In this moment, we were down 0-3 against the woodworkers, and this was our chance to turn all around the Cinderella story. And you know what? You just made us the Cubs. We're going to get knocked right out of the fucking round. Nobody's going to give a shit.
Swept.
Only your last efforts can make the Cinderella story true. Like Brett Favre when he came to the... Actually, no, that ended in defeat.
No.
Like Eli Manning throwing one crazy pass to some third-string receiver like he does in every Super Bowl, you can help make the dream happen.
Yay.
Go Giants. Hashtag
Additionally,
go Giants.
Send your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Also, special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We cranked out the The October Q&A episode a couple days ago. We're going to have the bonus episode fairly soon, and also going to be doing some commentary on anime movies coming up. I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to be available for all this stuff because I'm busy on two straight Saturdays to close out the month. Yay. But we'll figure that out, have it up very soon. And yeah, thank you for so much for that.
Yes.
We love doing extra stuff for you guys. Also, special thanks go to Steve Mann, our title artist. You can check out his work in a billion different places. Also, special thanks to the Infamous Planet and Felix Dark for doing the visual editions of our show. And next week, you should have Parasite.
Yes. Yes, we shall. I guess that's it. Anything else? Anything else we want to throw out there?
No, it sounds like a siren just went off over in your end.
Yeah, my house is probably on fire. It's fine. I got
hey!
It probably started on the other side of the house, has to work its way past my mom. So, you know, once I hear her screaming, then I'll probably get my shit together.
Thank you for listening to this last edition of Weekly Manga Recap.
This is actually my dream, guys. I really wanted to go out podcasting. I always wanted to podcast my final moments. No, it's really cold. I didn't do a lot with my life. Huh. Didn't think I had that many spider webs up there. Oh, but now I'm going crazy. Ugh.
Chris!
Bury me with my money.